The era of big data has transformed the way that businesses gather information about their customers, the way governments assess the needs of their citizens, and has also led to whole new areas of scientific research. Perhaps the best-known example of so-called data mining is Google Flu Trends, which has shown some success in tracking the spread of flu epidemics by analysing online searches, or at least that's how Google sees it. They think they've had some success in that anyway. Well, in the first study of its kind, researchers in Cambridge and London have looked at data generated by commuter journeys on the London Underground, and they hope it will tell us a few new things about the British capital city, its residents and their habits. From London, Robin Powell reports.
Last year, the London Underground carried over 1.1 billion passengers, the highest number ever. More and more people are using the Tube, as it's known, and the vast majority use contactless travel cards, called Oyster cards, beeping through the turnstiles at each end of their journey. Now, each Oyster card has a unique anonymised number, which means every one of those journeys is logged and stored on the Transport for London servers. For Daniela Ketcher at the University of Cambridge Computer Lab, this data is a goldmine.
We took 1 month of transportation data from the underground, 76 million journeys done by Londoners. And then we compare with the census data, in particular it's called Index of Multiple Deprivation.
In a paper to be presented at a conference in June, Ketcher and his colleagues suggest that the data taken from these millions of underground journeys reveal things about different communities in London, rich and poor, that hadn't been proved on this scale before.
One of the most interesting aspects was that what if we differentiate well-off areas from deprived areas? What is going to happen? And what we found is that deprived areas are visited only by people who live in deprived areas, whereas well-off areas are visited by everyone. So there is some social segregation going on for people living in deprived areas.
That result might have been expected from what we already know about movement in cities, says sociologist David Byrne from the University of Durham. But the method is new.
Actually, what they're saying isn't terribly surprising. It would work even more strongly in many of Britain's provincial cities. What is interesting is the way they've thought about using this kind of electronic data and data mining.
Ketcher says that his technique lets researchers and policymakers observe changes in the social makeup of the city far quicker than ever before.
One of the things you can do with this kind of data, you can measure changes at a finer temporal level. So before you had to wait 5 years, 6 years to have the census data to understand the social deprivation in an area. Now you can track changes in the matter of 1 month, 2 months, 6 months.
But can we really use lists of journeys taken by Londoners to answer complex social questions about well-being in the city? For a start, there are whole sections of the population that aren't covered by Ketcher's database. People who take the bus, for example. Byrne says this is a serious omission.
There are big chunks of London which are rather poorly served by the Tube system. So a lot of East London, and in particularly South London, and these tend to be rather more working class areas. So they don't have the full set of data. Now, the authors are perfectly clear about this. I mean, they're absolutely honest about the limitations of their data, but I think it's quite an important point.
Philippe Roder from the city's research hub at the London School of Economics comments that the connection between how people move around a city and social deprivation is far from straightforward.
That in itself is a big social science question, and there have been various attempts to link whether or not the amount of being connected with other human beings in the city and beyond is important to be economically active and successful.
Ketcher agrees that the research his team has done is a first step.
I wouldn't tailor policies around these results, but definitely at the conclusion of these studies that you can look at this data, we are going towards the right direction, and maybe we need to integrate different data sources, and that's exactly what we are doing now.
Adding sources like social media to gauge well-being more directly is another big data challenge that lies ahead. Experts agree, though, that data mining represents a huge opportunity for social sciences. In fact, in the UK, there's been much debate over whether the 10-year national census, which still is based on responses to questionnaires sent out in the post, should be replaced by an analysis of information already held by the government and other organisations. The data mining techniques pioneered by scientists like Kircher show that future may not be so far away. Robin Powell for DW, London.